Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Did you guys know that Wood Talk has a YouTube channel? Yeah, we didn't either until Margaret reminded us. About 4 to 5 years ago, we would record the show live on YouTube, and those episodes stayed there for tens of people to enjoy. But we stopped doing live shows, and the YouTube version went away with it. Well, now it's time for a little experiment. As something of a test, we're going to post an enhanced version of the podcast to YouTube, meaning not only do you get to see our faces, you also get to see some images and other visual aids that are relevant to the things we're talking about. Look, guys, I understand your apprehension about looking at Matt and Shannon too long. I mean, ugh. But that's why we're adding other things, so that there's more to look at, and hopefully that'll make it worth your while to watch instead of just listening. We'll keep the whole Matt and Shannon tough to look at thing to ourselves, okay? Now, I'm going to be honest. We're going to look at the view count and engagement and see if this is really worth our time to do this. So if you even think you want this to happen and you want it to continue, you need to head on over and watch it and just let us know. Otherwise, we're going to assume that this was a dumb idea and Margaret will be sad. You don't want to make Margaret sad, do you? Anyway, just search for Wood Talk on YouTube or go directly to youtube.com/woodtalk.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who might stop by to ask for a cup of slab. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
Well, what's up, everybody? It's episode 543, and on today's show, we're talking about Rubio and the fantastic finishing fallacy, scrub planes, and bought a bandsaw mill, now what? But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before January 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. This time we're thanking Thomas Holmes, Manuel and Crystal, Joel Balestra, and Hand Screwed.
Yeah.
As opposed to other ways of being screwed.
That's true. There are other ways. Double I just screwed. Want to make sure all these people were concerned that with your newfound vision that you wouldn't actually mispronounce names anymore.
Is that how that works?
I'm glad to say you still put extra letters in there that weren't there. So everything's
still
fine.
Still the same Matt, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Still the same guy. Okay, hey, guys, I have really important breaking news here.
What is this?
I just got to let you know, Adria wrote in to let us know that she just finished all of her Wood Talk Benjamin Button reverse playthrough. She started on April, let's see, she started in April. She finished at 4 p.m. on December 13th.
That's a commitment.
Yeah, she did a great job, right? I mean, that's
she did a great job.
That's fantastic.
Good job. She made it. That makes it a good job.
She emailed us. I figured it was an important thing to update people on. Actually, you know,
maybe we should do that instead of reading people's names for Patreon supporters, people who listen to the whole catalog. Oops,
hit the button again. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a big deal. That's serious commitment to do that, especially if this.
I can mispronounce your names in two different ways, yeah. Either as a patron or as a listen to every episode person.
Right. At this stage of the game, that's a hell of a commitment. 500 and what are we on? 43? Yeah, 543. That's a lot of episodes. So another piece of breaking news, you guys may have already known about this, but the New Yankee Workshop now has its own YouTube channel. So instead of these ding-dongs that just like take a recording and upload it, and that's now the version that everyone gets to watch, these are officially sanctioned New Yankee Workshop episodes. As far as I understand it, they're putting the whole catalog up there. And just yesterday, I got a notification that Russ Mirage, the producer of the show, just did a quick shop tour. Inside the shop, and it was the coolest thing. He's just walking around. You could tell he kind of sort of uses the space still to some extent. I don't know to what extent, but he's obviously everything's clean. It kind of was like frozen in time for like the last episode that was done in that shop.
It's that was my question. I saw your Instagram story and I was just looking at it. Okay. And I was like, has anybody used that? Like it's almost like It's like when I go to Cracker Barrel and I see hand planes tacked to the wall. It's like such a shame. There's a nice saw above me there. I just wonder, like, is this just this gorgeous shop? Granted, it's what, 10 years old? Gosh, no, it's lower than that. How long ago did the show go off the air?
2008.
Okay. It wasn't that long ago. Oh, wow. Still.
15 years.
This millennium. Still
anyway. A substantial amount of time.
So has somebody just been showing up and dusting it like once a week?
Yeah, because I mean, it looks clean. Like it doesn't look like it hasn't been kept, but it also hasn't changed very much. And there was, I think, like a giant fake plant in there. Did you see that too? Like when you first walk in. So I'm sure it's like, you know, I don't know how much the guy does woodworking, but I think he probably goes in there and, you know, does some things. But it was weird just to see it kind of encapsulated in time.
I'm just wondering if there's like a New Yankee Workshop museum. Where are they? Are they in Massachusetts? Somewhere in New England.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's like a museum that you can go to and like walk around. There's like velvet ropes and stuff. Like
they could just make that tools. They could just make that the museum. I would pay money to go in that place and look around.
Seriously, get your selfies at right? Inside Norm Shop in front of the big, you know, in front of the big what's that thing called? Drum sander. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Someone pointed out that is missing though. So at some point they may have sold that. I mean, if you're not really using it, do you really want a time saver sitting there that you could get some money for?
Maybe.
Right. It could have been on loan. That's true. It could have been a loaner.
Who knows? I think Matt's idea is more iconic. Get a picture with a Brad Miller.
Yeah.
or get to like, you know, like write on a piece of officially sanctioned New Yankee Workshop note paper that says, you know, Matt was here and Brad nail it to the wall.
Yeah.
You know, it's like most places have you put a thumb pin, like a tack on the map, you know, where you're from. Use a Brad nail.
Well, they also had the classic New Yankee Workshop sign, which used to live outside, at least for like the opening shots, is now in the doorway. So as you slide the barn door open, it's hanging in the doorway, which also kind of implies that people don't go through there that often, because otherwise you would have to, you know, navigate around a sign that's hanging in your way. But either way, it's cool. You guys got to go check it out if you have any sort of memories of that show or you grew up on that show. It's quite nostalgic to see now that it's, you know, the show's been off the air for so long. Okay, what's on the bench? I finished a dining table only to start redoing an old dining table.
Is it a outdoor cedar table?
No.
Because that'd be funny.
Oh, no. Haven't I already done that?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
that, I think I've done that a couple times. No.
It's that time again. It's been a little while. Right? It's time to refinish the cedar table thing outside. Right.
No, that thing was already repurposed into another thing. But what I should do is take the smaller coffee table I made with it and now turn that into like a serving tray. Like it just keeps getting smaller and smaller each time.
I did that with a pair of Adirondack chairs. I took a picnic table and now there are two chairs sitting out in front of the house. You know, I'll work that into one chair and then, you know, eventually into a stool and then a serving tray. Yeah, just over the years. What'll be curious is like if you do a video every time you refinish the cedar table, what the views look like. Like if they get better, like, oh man, you should do more content like this. We'll get lots of comments like that.
My views don't get better. It just, we do what we do and it's fine. Nothing I can do except for like foreclosure or I lost a sponsor. Like it's all about drama these days. It's the only thing that gets views. Stupid.
Miter gauge shootout thing.
Gotta be dramatic. But yeah, so this old dining table, it's not that old. It's actually the dining table I made for Jason, my brother-in-law. So they brought the dining table back here. Now they have a smaller house, and this was previously, it was like a dining room dining table. But in the new house, this has become the daily use table. So any of the, you know, busy life with two little kids and a family sort of things that expose the weaknesses of a particular design in terms of either trip hazards or knee banging. That's what we found out, is that my sister-in-law is not happy with how many times she's hit her knee on the top of the leg because of the way they kind of squeeze in on one side together. So we decided to, like, that's the funny thing about this. Like, they were like, oh, you're not, I suggested this to them. And they're like, no, we can't do that. We can't change the table. I'm like, why can't we? Like, what, who cares? Like, it doesn't matter to me if we can reuse some of the parts. Better yet, let's see if we can make this thing more functional. I don't know if it's going to look as good, but let's try it. So we basically got a recip saw and took the rails off and repositioned the legs. But I had to grab one new piece of walnut to make two new long rails. The old long rails were cut down to make new short rails, and the legs were repurposed. So I didn't actually have to add much material. The top is fine, so the top is just getting refinished. So yeah, it was actually kind of a fun little problem-solving project. But in the end, it's still a functional table. They're going to be a lot happier with it now. And to me, that's worth it. The old design, you know, what do I care? I got the video. It's fine. Not that attached to it. So yeah. That's what's going on with me. Shannon, nice. You're doing boring stuff.
Yeah.
Boring stuff.
Exactly.
That's what I see.
Are you running a business or something?
My December has been characterized by a website redesign. It's been coming for a while, and I've kind of had a dev site up for like the last 5 months, just kind of toying with ideas and playing with stuff. And I finally established what I needed to do. And then it became just a whole lot of data migration. And, you know, I'm changing. I'm going back to the studs, a whole new tech stack on the thing. So there's and it's different enough that unfortunately, like the data export from the live site, it looks nothing like what needs to be imported. Mm-hmm. So I've got a fair amount of like VBA, like Excel programming chops, but there's just, I'm sure there's a way to program some of the data transformation, but by the time I figure that out, if I just like suck it up, I'll get it done. So yeah, like, right. You know, it started with like, I don't know, 700,000 rows or something. And I was able to kind of do simple find and replace. And that was, you know, culled down. So now I'm down to like the last 600 rows. And I just can't think of any way but to go through row by row and do like a copy and paste type thing.
Yeah.
Because I've got to like associate subscription numbers with transaction numbers. And it's just, yeah, it's great fun.
But sounds like a job for John Funk.
Yeah.
He has done I'm so sure. many times with our changes. We'll make like that broad change that needs to just have some little thing added or a piece of data moved to a different spot. And he just writes these custom scripts that go through and do it all. I mean, it costs me money to do that, but
He's very good at it. and I think that some of it is I've spent a fair enough already on the actual like web design.
Yeah.
That now that we're just down to data migration, it's like, I can do this. And honestly, I've probably got all told, like I do it little dribs and drabs. I maybe have 3 hours into it. So it's not that much. It's just one of those things where you're like, oh my God, I still have 600 rows to do. Yeah.
That's the kind of work that Matt does after LASIK. I mean, it's no big deal.
Pretty much. So
this reminds me of my job before I started doing this. I did all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah. But you know, the good news is I'm thrilled about the site. Like it's got a full on learning management system that it never had before. The flexibility, like in the architecture, is so much more. I thought my current site was super, super flexible, but you know, that was 6 years ago. So
yeah.
A lot has changed. I'm pretty excited about what I'm going to be able to do with the school and how I'm going to be able to kind of break out and build skills, learning paths and things like that. So yeah, it's all good. Just got to like move all those pesky customers and transactions into place, you know. Why I got to have so many customers.
It must be so tough.
Jeez. I know.
Life.
It's rough.
All those paying customers. Oh, terrible.
So yeah, right, unfortunately, Matt, that's the extent of my woodworking.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too fun.
Nah.
I mean, I'm not doing much more than you then, Shannon, because I'm just literally putting a pallet racking and moving crap around in a barn.
Yeah, but you're like you're, well, it's not your shop, but it's kind of your shop, you know, you're like in it. Maybe I should bring the computer down to the shop, like where I am now, and do Excel in the shop. It would make it more fun.
I don't know if that'll help you.
I think it might kill the shop.
I think that would just distract
you. Doesn't count as woodworking.
I'm going to get 300 rows done today. Okay. I got distracted after 10. I'm planning a board. It doesn't need to be planned. Yeah. Just making shavings.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how it would work.
That's what would happen to me. Like, yeah, I'm good. I'm playing some boards. I'll call it good.
Nice.
That's been like I've been doing, just kind of getting things set up and kind of getting that behind me. It's been really weird having this like, it's like this like weird mental strain of like, I had this whole space that's just got crap everywhere that is not functional yet, that don't really necessarily need to have functional, but it would be really nice if I didn't think about it anymore.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of dedicating my life to getting it to a point where it's at least set up and somewhat organized so that it could be functional if I need it to be.
Yeah. That's good though. That gets a weight off your shoulders when you do stuff like that.
I mean, it's weird. Everybody has
like pressing weight of something like that before.
Right. That's what I was just going to say. It's like everybody's got a little bit of OCD and there's that like that chaos that's sitting out there in the barn. And you're like, you know, it's kind of sight unseen, but at the same time, it's like in the back of your head going, I really, you know, I should go clean that up. I should put down like lines on the floor to know where to park the telehandler.
We can. He knows where to
follow
park
the path. Those tires can follow it perfectly into this little hole.
Just keep going, and you'll make ruts. It'll be fine.
These are things that you need in order to pass an OSHA inspection. I discovered that last week when you know we're about to launch the new mill. So the insurance company sends out the former OSHA agent to like do a mock inspection, and you know. It's little things and they cut you slack because you realize you're still moving in. But like, you know, the signage for where the eyewash station is and like the little hash, like the yellow and black warning hash stuff on the ground to show like we don't walk there. And oh, my God, like there is so much stuff like, yeah, keep OSHA away from the barn, Matt. They're not going to be happy.
I mean, as long as there's no employees out there, I'm good.
Yeah, I think you're all right. All right, let's get to some kickback. You guys occasionally write us with insightful and interesting things, and we like to read it on the show. So I got one here from Brian. He says, I just listened to episode 542 and had a strong gut reaction to Nathan's comment about being depressed about his project until the internet points start piling up. What the crap, Nathan? But also, what the crap to all of us? I know this feeling. I bet a lot of woodworkers that have not become fully actualized content creators do too. I got into woodworking out of the need and curiosity. I remember the days when building a thing that was functional and maybe even a little nice to look at sparked joy. The journey mattered at least as much as the end result. In those days, Pop Woodworking and Mark and Shannon and old Matt were an inspiration. New Matt wasn't born yet.
Matt. Oh, I'd say young Matt.
He was still a baby. He was a baby. But they were a learning resource. I never saw them as the Joneses with which I needed to keep up. I would have laughed at the idea of buying a domino or building a backyard bandsaw mill. And yet here we are in an area where we all seem compelled to live a life that imitates content. Social media has changed everything. It changed the incentives. It's changed what it means to be a woodworker for a lot of us. It's deferred the satisfaction we're supposed to get from the process and the product to the success or failure of the content that we made along the way. If I had any advice for Nathan, it would be to shut off the phone and let your brain rewire a little bit. Stop comparing your projects to the unrealistic beauty standards of those sexy chairs and cabinets on Instagram. You know they're being enhanced with filters, right? Better yet, stop posting your projects to social media for a while. Learn what it is to appreciate the process and the product without the dopamine hit. If you create something functional and attractive, that thing and the journey that brought it into the world has meaning beyond what strangers think about it. I'm glad social media has been a big part of the success of folks that I admire, like the Wood Talk crew, but for the rest of us, it's been unhealthy, and I sort of wish it would die in a fire. Look, I'm not going to disagree with Brian on that one. And now I bid you goodbye so I can go post a shitty spoon I carved, an at mention and of all trades, and hashtag the crap out of it for internet points.
Wow. God, I'm depressed now. That's,
I mean, there's a lot that of that I identify
brilliantly
with.
Put.
It's
yes.
It's accurate. And even people who are in it don't make the mistake of thinking that everybody who is in it loves being in it. Some of us find ourselves here, you know, compelled to do it because it's part of our job now and we have no choice. But it's not something that I truly love anymore. And I've got lots of problems with the way that social media makes things happen. Here's an interesting thing, though. Do you guys think if social media hadn't occurred. Let's take a step back 16, 17 years ago. Woodworking as a hobby, a lot of people were saying it was dying. The magazine subscriptions were tanking. Television shows were no longer interesting enough to keep on the air or didn't have a format that would work for current TV. And every, club of woodworkers was just filled with like old dudes falling asleep, and things have really changed. But I think a lot of that is a lot of people are a little bit narcissistic and they enjoy the attention, and there's a lot of gratification. Like, I don't know how, what kind of depth there is to that gratification, but there is gratification for posting stuff in a community like that and getting the pat on the back. And in some cases, some people, maybe that's all it is. You take that away and they may have lost interest in woodworking a long time ago. Right. So, yeah. I mean, would you credit some of the current, influx of new woodworkers to this aspect of it, the social media aspect, the attention getting aspect of it?
Absolutely. If for no other reason than there might have always been like a latent interest, and then to have it kind of thrown in your face, it sparks that. But more importantly, it's made it more approachable, because I think from the outside, woodworking is very daunting, whether it's power tool, hand tool, there's lots of tools. You need a big space to do it. Norm Abrams taught us that, right? You need a big space with lots of big tools in order to do it. And the skills seem beyond reach, because the previous format, the 22 and a half minute show, where you built an entire piece of furniture, I love Roy Underhill, but I could not build a single thing that he built following his instructions. You just can't do it in 22 minutes. It's just not possible.
Yeah. So, and it also wasn't even remotely geared toward the fresh face, like the person who just got into it.
Yeah. So it was really daunting. So it was like, even David Marks, especially David Marks. His stuff was so incredible. You know, you'd watch it for like the, wow, that's cool. But the thought of actually doing that, David played up the whole, I'm a master craftsman with decades of experience, and that's why I can do this. Not that makes him sound egotistical. David's like the least egotistical person in the world. I think you can probably say that. But that, I remember watching that show and going, my God, like, there's no way I'm going to attempt that. And I think social media, sorry for the buzzword, has democratized the whole thing and made it so much more approachable. So there's people jumping in and building stuff that they would have never tried before. And to go with Mark's point, I think the industry has responded and keyed in on getting more people into the craft and keyed in on beginner woodworkers and developing tools. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say Festool developed the domino for that, but it certainly was a really good move to make mortise and tenon joinery more approachable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I would love to see a Thanos snap that gets rid of social media and watch what the population of woodworkers turns into at that point.
That'd be really interesting. Thanos snap. I think we could do with half the population of the planet. But
that's Shannon, that's for a different show. Save that for your show. Absolutely. That's the lumber industry update. I want half of you to go away.
Yeah. at least those 600 rows I still have to import, just make them go away. That would be good.
Yeah, there you go.
I think that this is, let's not just pick on woodworking. This is extended to everything.
Absolutely.
I was just watching a video of a couple of mountain bikers I follow on YouTube, and one of them decided to go out on the last day of the year and go hunting for King of the Mountain points on Strava. Strava is the cycling social media network, well, running as well. And she's making the point, like, while she's basically kicking everyone's butt, going up this hill, like, none of this is real. Like, people post just for the sake of posting that they did a ride or they did a workout. And half the time, like, the numbers are not correct. Like, what was it? Brian said there's filters on this furniture, right? Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same. Like, I'll go on to, and I find myself like even doing it from time to time. Like, I'll go out for a somewhat easy ride, but then I get kind of carried away and I end up going a little bit too fast. And then I go a little bit faster and I get like caught up in peer pressure, but I still mark it as easy ride or recovery ride. Like, come on, dude.
I was
like,
just relaxing.
You were pushing 300 watts for an hour. That was not a recovery ride, but I still label it as recovery ride. I'm like, you're so full of it,
Yeah.
But there's this pressure. There's all these people posting all the time, whether it's knitting or woodworking or cycling. Yeah, it's kind of sick. That's the best way to put it.
But it's weird because it's a catch 22. Like, it has spawned a whole new, like you said, the market has adjusted to beginners, there's more competition, there's new products. A company like Woodpeckers wouldn't survive if it wasn't for new woodworkers who had money. You know what I mean? Like, it just wouldn't work. But here we are getting innovation. Now, it's for better or for worse, I don't know, because there's a lot of bad that comes with it, but there's also a lot of good that comes with it. And it feels good to be part of a community that's alive and well with a lot of energy, that actually has its own conferences instead of a conference, or not a conference, but a woodworking show that can't survive because no one wants to go to it anymore, right? Which is what we were dealing with 10 years ago. So, I mean, I see all of his points, but
I think it's still a net gain. I mean, there's a lot of negative.
I agree.
And I think we're getting to that point where it's, you know, the pendulum is swinging so far one way that it's kind of all bad now. But yeah, like you said, if we go back 15 years, woodworking was solitary. You know, you'd go in your shop and you'd work on a bunch of stuff, and it's probably, you know, no one really ever saw it.
Yeah, in a forum is the best you could do. Take a picture and put it up in a forum.
That wasn't easy either.
No,
I still have some forum software I can't figure out how to upload a photo to.
But now there's at least, like the way I see it, there's at least a chance of exposure to a young person coming in who may have never otherwise seen this stuff. I mean, someone may run across a woodworking video on TikTok, you know, whatever new platform is there, they get exposed to this and they might not have otherwise. And, you know, yes, there's a lot of BS that comes with this stuff too, but there could also be the next great woodworker that comes out of that who wouldn't have seen that inspiration if they weren't on that platform. So anyway, enough time on that. Matt, you want to grab the next one?
All right. It's from Dave. If anyone is looking to do woodworking and doesn't have a space, there's people out there giving away campers that you can get out and turn into a wood shop. I got a 31-foot camper given to me, and I do all of my woodworking in it.
That's wild.
Interesting.
Right on.
Can I get a camper just to use as a camper, though?
Probably. I don't know.
No, you have to do woodworking in it.
Okay.
So get a hatchet and chop firewood. You know, there you go.
Gut the whole thing.
Yeah. That sounds cool, though. Very cool. All right. I guess if you get a camper and you need to build up your shop inside that camper, you know who you go to for that good stuff?
You've done better. That's
not as good.
Look, it's Sunday.
That was reaching. It's a bit of a stretch.
Nicole's not feeling good. Well. I had to make eggs.
You got another
everybody.
One for us? Try again. We'll give you what we do on that one.
You know who else likes to outfit campers? No.
You're stuck on the camper thing.
It's the last thing we talked about.
About giving things away. You know who else gives things away?
You know who else doesn't? You know who doesn't give anything
away?
Do the
giveaway thing.
Oh, yeah, they do give away stuff. They also give away a lot of information.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
You want to start from the top again?
Look,
or you
guys,
want to take it from here?
You guys ruined it. You ruined it. It's over. I'm not even into it anymore. All right.
I'm not even into it. I'm not doing it.
All right. Build your dream shop with the help of Rockler and me clearing my throat.
And put it in a camper.
You could if you wanted to. Whether you're planning to build your first workshop in a camper or you're looking for ideas to improve your existing workshop that may or may not be in a camper, Rockler's Build Up Your Shop Guide has you covered. It's a collection of more than 50 articles, videos, and free project plans that will help you make the most out of your woodworking shop space. Find the guide online at rockler.com. It's good stuff.
You can go around and visit all the stores in your camper.
Oh, yeah.
No results for camper on rockler.com. Bummer.
Well, there's an opportunity for you guys. Get on it, Rockler.
No teardrop plans, none of that. Come on. Wow.
Well, that actually surprises me.
What, the teardrop thing?
That they don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Or something for teardrop.
Yeah, those are popular. All right. Well, let's get to some questions.
Speaking of Rockler, I don't know if this falls into a mid-roll, but since I know that every now and then they listen, we got an email saying that wood talk code's not working anymore.
I just used it the other day.
All right. So it was
may have been like a temporary
data
thing.
Points.
Yeah, I had to get a clamp and Rockler had the best price and I didn't want to pay shipping. So I just used the code. It worked just fine.
So okay. It works for the three of us, just not you guys.
That's how I handle all guild challenges. Like, I can't get the video to play. And I'm like, well, it works for me. Sorry. That's my extent of my troubleshooting. It's not true at all. Okay. Nathan has a question. Where is it? Okay. He says, I've been on the fence for a long time about giving Rubio Monaco to try. James from Wood by Right recently posted a video, which almost made me pull the trigger. Then I saw an Instagram post from Mark saying that Jason wasn't happy with it. He's referring to the table we're redoing. This
is underscoring our kickback perfectly right now.
Isn't it though?
Uh-huh.
So what gives? I was looking for an easy finish that I'm currently using Match General Finishes regime, which I'm happy with, except for, is it a regime or would that be a regiment? What? Is that the right word? Regime?
Recipe. Regime? Yeah.
Regime is kind of a, that's really a regimen would be.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, not the nitpick. I'm happy.
I mean, my finishing process does rule with an iron fist.
I was thinking of Cremona's. There you go. Cremona's regime in general is something we could talk about. he says he's happy with it mostly, except for the insane 24-hour cure time between coats. I'm a hobbyist woodworker building just for myself and just want an easy, durable, and fast finish. So,
first, 24 hours between
Matt,
coats.
Are we talking about you, Matt, or is there another Matt we're talking about here?
No, this is
what
Cremona.
Is the general finishes regimen?
The same one everyone else uses that Matt just made a video about.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Like, has Matt invented another finish?
Video and then it became a thing. I don't know.
Yeah. The same one I made in a video and charged money for it and put it on a DVD.
Yes. Right. I bought that DVD.
He learned it and then he put it on YouTube.
And then a few years later, after enough time went by, I repurposed it into my own thing.
Which, to be fair, Mark, is the one that you stole from David Marks, but yours isn't tongue oil.
Yeah, but he used tongue oil. I turned it into varnish. So it's all different.
I got to go find that. I got that here somewhere. I got all the original Marks stuff.
Oh, the original DVD.
From back in the day.
That thing's a classic. Yeah, I think I've got
your classic logo.
I've got the DVDs. I've got the pencils.
It's got, that's the one that has
the original t-shirt with the Festool logo on it.
That's the one that has Nicole cutting in and doing like the information segments that she was really uncomfortable with. I mean, like green screen the background. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, as an aside, it's just so funny that you used to live like, you live in a world where you would actually like make DVDs.
Yeah, that was called a world that existed 15 years ago. That's
anyway.
I can't even fathom the idea not that of like actually producing like a DVD that I then had to.
Oh,
like
I can't fathom
physically
it either.
Produce.
How about this, Matt? How about
for
this?
The covers.
Not only did we produce them, but I bought a box that basically was like a standalone PC. You know, just like a very dumb PC that was a duplicator
with the copy tower.
Uh huh. And that's how we made them.
Those, yeah.
And I would get like six or seven of those babies at once, man. That's like the 15 year ago equivalent of Shannon copy and pasting code line by line.
Yeah. And they had like a labeler machine to put the label on.
Yeah, we did.
Top
we printed our own labels. It was a whole thing. All right. So there's a couple things to break down here in this question.
Anyway, we have a question that we're trying to answer.
It's kind of like we were just having a conversation and the questions just kind of spur us to go on to our next topic.
Yeah. The show's really about us. It's not about you guys.
It's our show. Okay.
It's what we wanted to talk about anyway. So thanks, Nathan. Shannon, you got the next one. All right, so this.
I thought you were serious. Like Nathan's gonna like. Nathan, why don't you leave an iTunes review?
That'll be helpful. So there's a couple problems with this. This is one of the things with Rubio that I'm finding really interesting lately. Have you guys heard of the ceramic finishes? There's a couple companies that are making ceramic top coats for the Rubio stuff, right? And So for years, people have been using Rubio as if it's like the next greatest thing. And it is, it's in a lot of ways, it's an easy to apply finish. It gets you a very nice close to the wood look. You get some protection out of it. But what Rubio is not is a bulletproof finish. A lot of people would look at a Rubio finished product, average people I'm talking about, like normies, not norm followers, but normal people. They would look at a piece finished with Rubio and they would go, well, is there finish on it? Like it doesn't look like it's a finished piece of furniture. This is kind of a new way of doing things, relatively new. So this is kind of what happened with my sister-in-law. She wanted something more durable. They've got two little ones who beat the hell out of that top. And Rubio was the kind of finish that I try to explain to people. Like if you know you're going to get something that's going to get beat up and you're going to have to retreat it and you want to keep it looking good, Rubio is a good choice because you could spot sand and then reapply. You're not putting a big thick layer on it. So its repairability is through the roof. It's great, but it is not a super protective finish. And somehow along the way, I guess because Rubio came from the flooring industry, you always got this, well, they use it on floors. And it's like, well, yeah, they do. But have you seen one of those floors? A lot of people would look at a Rubio treated floor, again, normal people, and would go like, is there a finish on there? Because it is a very like matte looking finish. And ultimately, you're getting a lot of water and liquid. You know, it's basically not going to absorb anything. So it does do that. But you're not putting a layer on top of the wood. You're just counting on the wood to do its dent and scratch resistance and things like that. So there's a misconception about what Rubio is and what it can do. I'm also reading through some of this and going, this, like you had the same reaction, Matt, this insane 24-hour cure time. There's nothing insane about 24-hour cure. That's pretty standard if you are familiar with classic finishes, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we've gotten to this point where it's like, gotta be fast, gotta be now. So let me step back though. We're talking about Rubio, and a lot of people are using it on big tables, and this is supposed to be, you know, we're under this illusion that it's a super highly protective finish. And it's also supposed to be simple, right? So now there's another product that we could add on top of it that's a ceramic coating. Well, if it was that good in the first place, why the hell are we putting something else on top of it, right? Because it's not as good as people seem to want to think it is. The ceramic may give you more protection. It's going to probably give you a little bit more of a sheen. All of the things that classic finishes already do. So my question is, why are we doing all this? Think about the amount of money you spend on Rubio, and then you go get, I know there's two brands I know of, I think Black Forest Company and Carbon Method are two that make the ceramic. And then you got to buy their product and put that on top. Now you're basically going to have a like 3 to 4 day application process, a significant amount of money just to get a finish that's probably still going to be inferior to conversion varnish or pre-cat lacquer, or maybe even just a classic lacquer finish. So I guess that's the thing. We're getting so far down this rabbit hole, and people are acting like finishes didn't exist before 10 years ago and we don't have other options. If this doesn't sound right to you, Nathan, go back to a finishing book from Flexner or Jewett and look at classic finishes and see what these finishes do. There probably is one that's been on a can for 20 years or been in a can for 20 years that would work for you. And you're talking about Matt's general finishes regimen. That's fantastic. Don't worry about the insane cure time. It's not insane at all. But if it's giving you the finish you want with the durability, protection level, the sheen that you're looking for, it's a great finish. That's why we all used to use it. I personally have gravitated toward Rubio, Monocoat, and other, you know, generally safer finishes for my own personal reasons. I don't think they're better than the finishes I used to use. I think they just have fewer VOCs and fewer chemicals that I'm exposing myself to on a daily basis. So it's a personal decision to do that. It's not because I think Rubio is so much more durable. So I don't know. That would be my advice to him. You guys have anything to add to that?
No, I think you got it.
It's a weird world, right? This is, again, back to the influencer thing. The way I see this went down, finishing is hard. And, Matt did a video just, we're talking about wiping varnish. That's the easiest of those finishes in most cases. And that's why we all kind of gravitated toward it. But it still necessitated a terribly made DVD when I did it. It necessitated Matt making an entire video of each of those steps.
I gotta find my DVD player and pull that thing
Please
out
do.
And find that DVD.
And get a video of you watching it. That'd be great. It's actually that video. If you want to see the video, it's in the guild. If you don't have access to it, I'll give you access. It's quite a delight.
What? Where's the fun in that?
Yeah, it's all digital. Well, it was digital before too. But
I have it on my Plex server. If you want me to pull it up now, we can watch it for the rest of the show. Just
in case. You never know.
But anyway, I really think that finishing is an art form, and it was extremely complex. There's a reason why people like, what's his name? Who's better than me? Tommy Mac.
Ain't nobody better than
that's
me.
That's going back a bit. Yeah,
there's a reason why Tommy Mac would make his stuff and he would send it out to a finisher to get finished.
Right. Yeah.
Finishing is an art form. And I think what Rubio did was it taught a lot of people that you don't need to spend as much time on the finish as you do on learning woodworking, because it can be easy. And it was that easiness that allowed people, and also the kind of the convergence of that with people making big slab tables. So now, let me tell you, if you try to finish a conference table the old way, you better know what the hell you're doing. It is not easy, especially even if you're spraying, to get
in a surface
area. Yeah, there's so much surface area, so much room for orange peel and overspray, and then you got to sand it down between coats. It is a complex process. No wonder people were craving something that would allow them to finish these big slab tables with just something that has this look that's completely consistent. And it does. When you're done with Rubio, it just looks perfect. It may not be the sheen you want, but it's going to look consistent all the way across. So it just made sense. And I think that convergence of this floor finish coming into the woodworking furniture world and the fact that all these newer woodworkers are making these big slab tables without the experience in finishing was just the convergence of things that made this turn into a whole new like revolution of finishing that people see in these hard wax oils. But I think it's there's going to be a disillusionment happening. And that's why companies are now making ceramic coatings to go on top of them, because they were never that durable of a finish to begin with. And people didn't realize. So I don't know. That's my thought.
That's a really interesting point. I think you really hit it. The giant slab furniture stuff, I think that really even further made this a like necessity,
yeah,
I guess, or that it made that product like actually viable, because the people making these big tables, they don't have the space for a spray setup to do that. Yeah.
They don't have a spray booth.
Where the hell are you going to put a spray booth to do like a 16-foot table?
Especially when you're starting in your garage. You know, a lot of these people were starting these small businesses.
The table is as big as your garage anyway. Like, where are you going to spray that thing?
I can't fit it in my garage.
Yeah.
And like, well, a table is just an elevated floor. So let's just do that.
Yeah. When I worked in a refinishing shop in Phoenix, one of the projects we had, and we're not building the table, we were just refinishing a conference table, and not even that big of a conference table. We spent like a full week dedicated to just getting that finish perfect on top of that thing, between the coats of lacquer, buffing it out, and just getting it to look flawless, so that when they put it in a friggin' room with all those fluorescent lights, you know, beaming down on it where you could see every little flaw in the finish, it was going to look perfect. And that was two guys who kind of knew what they were doing. It took us a long time to get that finish looking perfect. That's really hard to do if you're a newer woodworker who's just trying to break into the market with your big slab tables, right? You need something else.
So here's the other question about Rubio, because I've seen it used a bunch. I've got a bunch of customers that use it all the time. I personally have never used it. What happens if you recoat it? Can you build it? Does it build to make a more durable finish?
No. So Rubio, basically the idea is it bonds with the raw wood fibers. And once they are bound, it doesn't accept more. Adding more Rubio, you can add a second coat and it will bring the sheen up a hair. You could use their universal maintenance oil. That'll bring the sheen up a hair. But you're not really going to build the finish. You'll only get like a sticky mess if you try to keep going with it.
So what would you call it? How would you classify monocoat? Is it a varnish? Is it a really dilute varnish? I mean, what's binding to the fibers?
It's a oil. And that's one of the things why even these days I don't use Rubio very much anymore. Again, I'm just going through a phase, guys, where I don't want like unknown materials touching my skin and my body.
It wasn't a phase, Mom.
Yeah. It's got stuff in it. Especially in that, it's a two-part mixture, right? So there's a hardener that you add to it, and finding out exactly what the chemical composition of that stuff is. I know it's no VOC. That's great. That doesn't mean that it's like something I want to drink. So I'm still cautious. I'm still cautious around it, but I do feel it's still way better for you and safer than a lot of the, like, I forget, like 500 grams per liter VOC that you'll find in something like a traditional wiping varnish. So it is still better in that sense. But like what exactly it is and why it works so well, the chemistry of it, I don't 100% know. Because the thing is, you just do a coat or two of Rubio and compare that to a classic oil wax finish. It's really no comparison. Like, you might be able to get a classic oil wax finish to look like a Rubio version, maybe after like five coats and a lot of work, but it's still not going to look quite as consistent on the surface as Rubio does. And there's other companies. Osmo is doing things like this as well. I don't know exactly how it works, but it does work. It is better. But you just get there in one or two coats instead of like five, six, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because it is definitely moving that direction. I've had a couple of manufacturers visit me recently with, you know, on the commercial industrial side, it is all about speed. You know, you're applying it in a single coat through a spray machine. Yeah, but more importantly, fast dry. And there's a product called Q-Tech that started in the decking world. And they've started to expand a little bit beyond that to the point where you can spray it and dead stack it. Mm. Like, is no dry time. And because of how it penetrates, kind of like what you're saying with Rubio, it doesn't sit on the surface. It actually gets sucked into the wood, like capillary action into the wood, and it dries in the wood. So you spray it on or run it through a finishing machine and pull it off the machine and drop it dead right onto the stack above it. And there's no, like, it defies all understanding.
That seems very weird.
That's crazy. Right?
It makes my stomach turn thinking, what are you doing here? And
shouldn't be able to do that.
It's really weird. So we're going to kind of that level. And then of course there's a whole UV cure finishes where you want instant cure. There you go.
Well, maybe that's a suggestion for Nathan. Starts with a V, I think. What is the name of that company that was around? I mean, I'm sure they're still around, but they sent me some samples and I tried it, and they have a little UV gun that you use and it's instant cure. And that might be an option for Nathan.
Solarez is one.
Darn it. I got a can of it in the other room. I can't remember.
Verathane.
No, not Verathane.
You can put a UV on that and see what happens.
But that might be something to look into. This is one of those things where, like, you know that old saying, I can't remember exactly what it is, but like you could either have it fast, you could either have it done well, or like, but you can only pick two of these things. Yeah. You can never have all three. That's kind of what the world of finishing is.
Good or cheap.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's kind of the way finishing is. You cannot have something that's easy, durable, fast, and healthy for you and the environment. Like those things, you cannot have them all, as far as I'm aware. So, and you know what? Hey guys, write us in. You guys have some suggestions for finishes for Nathan that meet all that criteria. Let us know. We might be missing something. All right, let's move off that one. Shannon, you're up.
Well, the last question is from Nathan. This one's from Nate. So maybe it's the same guy and he's just trying to fool us.
Double dipping.
But technically, this is for Mark and myself, because he says this isn't an industrial equipment question. So who knows if Matt will have an answer.
That's all he knows.
What industrial equipment do I have?
All of it.
You are there now, Matt. That's now your brand.
Look at that boom arm. It's like a professional industrial boom arm.
Mark's got a CNC.
I don't.
You have
a CNC.
Forklift, Matt, and a telehandler, and a barn.
Okay, five for moving things around.
All right,
I got heavy lifting friends.
I don't even have the industrial saw stop. I just got a regular one.
You got that planer?
Yeah, you're right. That okay.
All right,
that's my one thing. My one thing.
It's my one thing, man.
Let me have.
All right, so I have.
I guess technically, then I should answer this because Mark, you're disqualified too. So Nate says, I seem to remember Mark talking about buying and then getting rid of a scrub plane at some point, but I can't remember the why. I am a hybrid scrub woodworker. Plane. Well, God, the why is
you're scared. Because I'm a joiner.
Nate says, I am a hybrid woodworker, but I have wanted to flatten some boards wider than my 8-inch joiner without ripping. So is it worth snagging a scrub plane or just work away with my low angle jack? So my answer to this is no, it is not worth getting a scrub plane. I actually, as one who uses a scrub plane all the time, I have a Veritas scrub plane. And I joke that the only reason I have it is my mother-in-law bought it for me for a Christmas present. I think buying a new scrub plane is the silliest thing you could ever do. You could buy the most rustiest beat up jack plane, you know, for $2 in an antique store, and you could use that as a scrub plane. Because what a scrub plane does not require is a flat sole or a tight mouth. It just needs a sharp blade and, you know, something to hold it at that angle. So I actually have a video called From Boat Anger to Foreplane or Scrub Plane. Because I called Josh Clark at HyperKit and said, send me the nastiest jack plane you have with like the most beat up everything. And I turned it into an effective scrub plane. So I do think if what you're trying to do is this hybrid flattening method where maybe you get it flat enough to just run through the planer, a scrub plane, well, let's just say a plane can knock down those high spots really, really quickly. A heavier set plane is going to do that super quickly. You're not worried about tear out or any of that crap. So if you already have a jack plane, just increase the depth of cut and do it that way. Don't be taking full width, full length passes. Just find the spots that are making that rock on your planer bed or making that, you know, it exhibit twist or something, knock those down and run it through the planer. You don't really need anything special. What I don't recommend is, you know, pulling out your smoothing plane with a thousands of an inch cut on it.
And, that's how I would do
you know, very delicately removing, you know, Instagram-worthy shavings that you're taking pictures of with every pass. You know, that's just that, yeah. So the only drawback I would say to the Jack is it's a little bit longer. And of course, it's going to span those hills and valleys. So if you really want to dedicate a plane to this, don't go buy a scrub plane. Mm-hmm. Go to an antique store and buy like a number four, smoother, a short-soled plane. Back the frog way back, sharpen the blade with a curve on it, and you're good. You're good to go. Don't even like take the rust off the thing. Don't flatten the sole. Don't do any of that crap. Just, you know, sharpen the blade and go to work.
So the reason I had a scrub plane was because I won an auction on eBay that I couldn't understand why a Lee Nielsen tool was going for so cheap. This was 2005 maybe. And I was so excited to get that plane and I got it and I'm like, what the hell is this thing? And quickly realized this was not the tool for me and sold it. So.
Yeah, so that even Mark, why. Like I'm the same way. I have one because it was gifted to me. And Mark was the same way.
Yeah, so there you go.
I'm not going to throw it out. I mean, I do use it, but yeah, it's
not it makes taking me a laugh. Much room.
It makes me laugh every time I pull it out because it's this precision ground flat sole. Yeah. And I'm taking like an eighth of an inch thick shaving off of it. Like, yeah. What the hell's the point, you know?
Blade shaped like a teaspoon.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes, scoop it out. All right. We got one here from John. John says, I was one of many woodworkers who bought a bandsaw mill at the start of the pandemic, and my sawmill is capable of producing slabs and lumber up to 22 inches wide. Now that some of the slabs that I have milled are getting to the point where they can be dry and workable, I am left to wonder how I process these slabs. I have a 6-inch long bed jointer and a 12-inch lunchbox planer. They both have helical heads. What should I do to preserve these wide boards and make milling relatively easy? A 16-inch jointer planer combo, a 4x8 router gantry, a 20-inch planer, all the above. Thanks for the advice. I mean, I think this guy actually ties into the last question, surprisingly. It's almost like someone paid attention when they pick questions for this.
Whoops. That doesn't happen often.
That's just sheer dumb luck.
I guess the question I have for this is that do you know what you're making, first of all, and do you actually need that full width? Because if you don't, then your first step is to grab your saw and make them narrower or make them closer to that rough size. You know, there's plenty of ways to flatten things that are bigger than your jointer. We talked about the scrub plane in the last question. Removing the guard and doing the little hangover thing can get you a few more inches. I mean, safely, I have a 12 and I've done 16-inch wide boards, or actually I've done 20-inch wide boards on that thing. So you can kind of get kind of big and then you use your little, auxiliary table thing in a planer. I've done videos about that to flatten the other side. And then you can remove that giant rabbit you made on the jointer. That's the one way to get something wider than your jointer flattened at least. But really, I mean, going back to like the beginning of like, what the heck are you making? And do you actually need that full width? Or are you thinking like I can want to be able to flatten these things and sell them? That's a totally different conversation than I'm producing a small piece of furniture. Like if you're making, I'm making a sideboard out of a slab. Probably don't need to flatten a whole giant wide board. You're going to be cutting your parts out of that slab. So I think that's the first question you have to answer for yourself. And then yes, you can spend all the money in the world you want and make this a lot more fast and efficient if you want to actually go that route. But really just figure out what the heck are you making with these things?
What are you doing?
Or you're just like, I just want a big giant stack of slabs that are flat. Cool. Have fun.
Jeez, Matt.
See, I think you hit that point, Matt. Well, like say he wants to sell them, you know, and he knows if they were S2S or whatever, they would sell for, you know, more of the non-woodworker market. You know, put some hairpin legs on it and be done. Like the reason that Home Depot sells live edge slabs. There's air quotes for those that can't see our video right now.
Glued and up live edge slabs, yes.
I think if that's what you were doing, then you want like something that's going to be really efficient for flattening a lot of slabs because your job now is flattening slabs. You know, you're not building it. But if you're building a side table or a sideboard and you want to have, say, a live edge top on it, but it's that one time, are you going to build a dedicated flattening station for that one task? See, I suppose, like, that's what you're into. But
if you're an influencer, you would.
unless you're a bad influencer like me and I just suck it up and like do the work and I get people in the comments telling me you should build this, it would make that much more efficient. It's like, yeah, but the next time I'm going to do this could be 20 years from now. So do I really want to build a dedicated station for that?
Right.
Yeah. Cool. I question though, like, well, I know Matt, you generally saw like 10 quarter and thicker, right? You know, it's kind of a nice,
I like 10 quarter because it can be resawed to 4 quarter.
Right.
Very easily.
I just feel like, you know, even if he just wants to have like a stack of already milled lumber or something, I still feel like you're doing yourself a disservice. Like, what happened to the days when we wanted rough sawn lumber? You know, I remember when I was getting started, it was like you had to go to a lumberyard to find rough sawed lumber because that was the ideal, because all of the norms and things like that told me we had to have rough sawn lumber. That's when you knew you were a real woodworker. You were starting with rough sawn lumber. Rough.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what's flipped under it. We've gone the other way, where so many lumber yards are now carrying S2S material or at least skip plane material. I still would rather have rough sawn because I feel like I have more potential. You know, if I've S2S'd it, I've taken thickness off. So I'm already like batting at a disadvantage there. If I decide, once I decide what it is I'm going to build with that, you know, if I've removed a quarter of an inch from it, I may have just eliminated something that I could do. Maybe I can't make a 3x3 leg out of it anymore or something. I feel like until you know what you're building, keep that wood as untouched as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Basically what Matt just said. So sorry, I just repeated that.
That was pretty good. I mean, like if you go back to talking about like a sideboard, the only board you need that's going to be like that full width is just the top.
Yeah.
Like let's say you're doing a frame and panel. Like the one I did, like you got four leg blanks. Okay. See, that's like square stock. You rip out of that slab. You don't need any width for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is like panels. So you could do, I don't know, however deep they are, 12 inch panels. So you can do a glue up of a book match. If you have a slab, you can resaw it and book match all day long.
Yeah.
You get your 12 inch panels that way. So, I mean, when you actually look at the actual pieces of furniture, there's not a whole lot of times you actually need like to flatten that whole damn thing and have like the thickness too. Like if you're doing like a chest of drawers and you have a 22 inch wide slab for the whole case side and it's 10 quarter, like you're not going to use a 10 quarter slab board for the side of a chest of drawers. I mean, you could.
It might.
Be freaking heavy.
You never know.
And then you're probably going to resaw it. You're going to plane it down or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't.
I think we're seeing is an artifact of, it's like hobbyist woodworkers are trying to operate like commercial mill workshops. And I can remember like myself, it's like, you know, you're setting up your shop. You want to think about workflow so that, you know, your milling area is over here and the boards flow off the milling area onto the bench. And yeah, if you're doing, you know, 1,000 linear feet of something, that makes sense. But if you're building a piece of furniture, none of that workflow stuff makes
I want to see sense. A hobbyist go out and buy a straight line ripsaw with a return conveyor. That's what I want to see.
Oh, you've probably manifested happening. It now. It's going to happen.
It's probably already happening.
Someone needs to do that.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's good for us. I think we're done here.
Is it?
You sure?
So. Is it good for us?
Pretty sure.
Because it was good for them.
You hope. I'm not so sure. Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler is everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com. Use the code WOODTALK, all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Right on.
Exciting.
Well, we've posed some interesting questions and I want some feedback on this. Most importantly, if your shop were to be immortalized as a museum, where would you place the velvet rope and what would you charge for admission? We want to know these things. Absolutely. Please write in. Go to woodtalkshow.com. You can fill out the form there or just email us at woodtalkshow@gmail.com. You can even record a voicemail. If you want to shoot a video of your shop tour, we probably won't put it on the show, but do it anyway. It'll be fun. Everyone will enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. It.
All right.
Go well, forth.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we will catch you next time.
We appreciate you. We love you all. Bye.
Bye-bye. Goodbye. Enjoy watching our video of us just sitting here talking to each other.
Yeah, well, you're assuming that's going to be a successful venture. We don't even know if this worked.
That's why I said at the end.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.